This is quite serious, isn't it, for the golf course? Because it, really, it's an institution in the area, been around since
1930.
1930, yeah.
Indeed. Yeah. Yep. So we'll be celebrating our centenary in just a few years' time. The club has really stayed pretty much like it is for the whole of that period. Our clubhouse was built in 1939. It's always been more of a community centre than a members' clubhouse. Indeed, when I think back to just yesterday, I was up at the club for a meeting and we had a couple of dozen ladies there who were having their weekly session of Mahjong, which closed around 4 o'clock, and then some of our members came in, having had in different rounds, some of them on the golf course, but some of them great rounds too. And then as I left the clubhouse, they were setting up for today's meeting of the local Probus group. So we usually have about 100 members who attend Probus. So car park spacing is at a premium for those times. So yeah, very much a community club as well as a golf club.
So how many members of the golf club do you have?
We've got loads of different categories, but if I told you we had a total of 800 members in total, of whom playing groups are probably three quarters of that number, the rest are more sort of what I would call, we've got practice memberships, we've got social memberships, we've got various different sorts of members at our club. But one of the things we're particularly proud of is in recent years, we've managed to attract a lot of young people to the golf club. So we've run in with about 170 under 25 people at the moment who are members of our club. And of that, nearly half of those are under 18. So we're just starting indeed youth programs for that group. And that will commence in October, and they're already full. So we're running those twice a week. And we're just planning now for the school holiday programs and getting around half a dozen schools and trying to make sure that we've got young people coming through, because we are very much a nursery club for talent. And indeed, many of our youngsters went on to be marvellous golfers in their own right.
Oh,
and
throw us some famous names. Same
famous names. So let me see. Starting at the top, Jeff Ogilvie, who's well known in the golfing community here. He was the US Open champion in 2006. We've also got guys like Matt Griffin, who's also a well-known golfer on the PGA Tour. So there's plenty of golfers. Sadly, our course is probably a bit small to really showcase their talents, and they tend to move on to the more prestigious clubs around Melbourne. But we're very much a nine-hole club. And just to talk to one of the points that you mentioned, the public have allocated times. It's not they can go on when the members don't want to. So their allocated times are all day Friday, all day Sunday, Monday afternoons, all afternoon and evening, Wednesday afternoons, all afternoon and evening, and at other times as well, beyond 3 o'clock on other days. So we're pretty much half and half in terms of public access and member access. And of course, we're very affordable.
And I remember way back when John Cain was Premier, he sent a message out to the golf clubs and he said, if you want to use public land, you've got to allow access to all people to the golf courses. So I saw that Victoria allowed women to become full members only in 2010.
Is that right? Mm. I never knew that stuff.
But what's happening at your club?
Well, we've got full access. We've got about 21% of our membership who are ladies. So today is Ladies' Day indeed. I dropped in at the club on my way here this morning. And so we have a good field of ladies on Wednesday mornings, on Monday mornings. And of course, Saturdays, any 7-day member, be they male or female, can play in our Saturday competition. So men's days are Tuesdays and Thursdays, ladies, Mondays and Wednesdays, and mixed on Saturdays.
And everybody can vote.
Everyone can vote and do. And in fact, a lot of us say, actually, it's the ladies who are the power behind the throne of our golf club. And that's probably true in a lot of organisations, I'm sure.
Okay. And let's talk then a little bit about what's happening with the lease.
Yes.
Because that was, I think, a bit of a shock for people. I know the first I heard of it was when I arrived at the August Bayside Council meeting to watch, and the lobby was absolutely heaving with people, and they told me they were from Cheltenham Golf Club.
Yes, we were gratified with the support we had, not just from members, though, but also from members of the public who live locally and who use
Well,
our,
most of your members live locally.
They do.
They?
Around 90% live within a 10K radius. So, yeah, we were very pleased with the support that we got at that meeting, not just from those, but from the councillors as well, who had done their homework and understood what we were trying to achieve at Cheltenham Golf Club going forward.
So what were you asking them to do?
For the lease? Well, our current lease runs out in 2030, and we were looking to secure a longer term because we've got some major capital expenditure coming up. Golf courses are all suffering from boundary issues with respect to safety and golf balls emanating from the course onto other areas, be they houses, be they roads, whatever. And so we need to spend some money, significant money, on making sure that our course is much safer than it is today going forward.
And have you got that in the piggy bank?
We've got most of it in the piggy bank. We're not sure exactly how much it's going to cost. One of the changes we're going to make is quite imminent. We're hoping to commence that next month. That'll cost probably the thick end of $300,000.
And what's that?
That's for changing the holes around on our western boundary, which is adjacent to the Victoria Golf Club, so that we make it safer for Victoria members where they've got a car park just abutting our land. So we're switching the holes around for
that. Okay, so here you are. You're thinking about your future. You're wanting to renew your lease a bit before it's due.
Yes.
And Victoria Golf Club comes along and says, oh, hang on just a minute, we'd quite like that golf course. What was your reaction when they put their hand up and said, us, our turn, please?
We weren't best pleased. It was to be honest with you, it was an existential threat because I haven't seen the detail of their proposals, but it was to carve up the course into three distinct lots and leave nine hole golf as only par threes, is what I understood. And that would have been the death of our club because our members like to play a full golf course, which is challenging. And, you know, that means par three, par fours and par five holes. And so we saw it as pretty much an existential threat. Victoria has to do what Victoria has to do, and so do we. And we were concerned that we could have had better conversations leading up to what they were trying to do. But anyway, they did what they did.
And how did you stop them from persuading the council that they should have the lease?
Basically, we had the lease anyway until 2030, so it was up to the council to decide whether or not they felt it was worthwhile to open it up to other parties. Given we've been tenants for 95 years, and we like to feel that we've done a pretty decent job of stewardship on the course, then we felt that we had a pretty good shot at it as long as we were doing the right thing. And, you know, there is a lot to be done with our parklands to make them better habitats for nature, for bird life, for other sorts of life as well. And that was part of our lease application, to make sure that we were doing just that. So we felt with that and the community support we get locally, because as I said earlier, the hub of the community is very much Cheltenham Golf Club, at least in our opinion. So we felt it was actually a pretty strong hand that we had. But of course, we're not big money.
And also, Philip, there are other precedents. And I'm thinking about Royal Melbourne taking over another smaller golf course. And I'm also thinking about the Elsternwick golf course being turned back into really valuable wetland habitat and public use. Is there perhaps an argument that it was time for the council to have a proper look at the future of the many golf courses we have in the Bayside area and say, well, actually, maybe it is time to review whether we need a small public golf course?
Well, I'm sure they took that into account in their thinking. I mean, bear in mind that most of the other golf clubs in the area are way more expensive than we are. You know, the highest joining fee we have for our 7-day membership category is $500. If you go next door, you'll be paying the thick end of $28,000 as a joining fee, let alone the annual dues. So our annual dues are just over $2,000 for 7-day members, and our kids under 18s pay about $400. So you can see we're in a different area here. We're trying to have the capability that for golf to be accessible for everyone, not just those who've got more money in their pockets. And, you know, the changes that happened with Sandringham were slightly different in the sense that the Sandringham course is not a golf club in itself. It was a totally public course, accessible 7 days a week. So it didn't have that community sense that we had. It was a perfectly good course. Some people say it's been significantly improved. Others would argue with that. I can't really comment either way. But there's no doubt they've done a good job. They've got a very successful driving range that is there. And of course, Golf Australia moved offices onto that course as well. So there are a lot of different drivers for the Sandringham change, which just weren't apparent for us.
Okay, no pun intended on the drivers there, Philip.
No, none at all.
All right, so there's a public consultation underway with the council, which finishes this weekend.
This weekend, 21st.
We'll keep an eye on that, and we'll see what happens. And we'll wish you well. And thank you, Philip Parker, so much for coming in.
It's been my pleasure.